J6, number 8A.
So therefore, we begin to appreciate what a scientific interpretation can do to a text that seems to just, which we can't seem to break into except through a personal feel, to get a religious feel for it, or an emotional lift from just perhaps what we might think about it. But here it gives us the exact science of the way God creates the heaven and the earth. All right, so we go on. And we come to Genesis chapter 1-2. And here it says, "And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." Something totally different, isn't it? There's a whole different tonality than the first. That whole first section certainly had a wonderful sense of an absolute standpoint, didn't it? Very complete. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, meaning that principle is a holistic, dimensional operation which brings forth the expression of itself. But here comes something totally different. It has a different feel. It sounds negative, doesn't it? That, "And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." So without a spiritual sense of, a scientific sense of text interpretation, we would say, well, God created the heaven and the earth, but the earth has problems, huh? It's without form, it's void, there's darkness upon the face of the deep, and somehow God has got to set everything right. The earth needs some type of correction. Or we could go a bit metaphysically and say that the earth is without form and void, and darkness. Well, darkness must mean ignorance. Ignorance is concerning the face of the deep. Well, face always means identity. You know somebody by their face, so that's their identity. So there must be ignorance about the identity of the deep. Well, that must be God. So the earth is without form and void, so there must be ignorance about the identity of God. So therefore the Spirit of God, well, Spirit or the order of God, has got to move upon the identity, the face of the waters of thought, to change the ignorance about God. That would be the metaphysical interpretation. But seeing that we're interested in the scientific interpretation, we say, well, what are the categories behind this? Well, let's see how Mrs. Eddy can help us out with the beginning to present to us what the categories might be behind this. And she says, in her interpretation of Genesis 1-2, she says, "The divine principle and idea constitute spiritual harmony, heaven and eternity. In the universe of truth, matter is unknown. No supposition of error enters there. Divine science, the word of God, setteth to darkness upon the face of error. God is all in all, and the light of ever-present love illumines the universe. Hence the eternal wonder that infinite space is peopled with God's ideas, reflecting Him in countless spiritual forms." Well, you almost feel she went on to give another dissertation besides what is the point under consideration. Hers is totally positive. Here we have a tonality to it. Here we have something that seems so negative to us, where it says, "And the earth was without form and void, and there's darkness upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters." One should feel depressed, that there's darkness, ignorance. And she comes forth with a very strong, positive statement. Well, let's hear if we can hear the categories behind what she has said. The divine principle and idea constitute spiritual harmony, heaven and eternity. In the universe of truth, matter is unknown. No supposition of error enters there. What category and what standpoint within that category allows us to talk about the divine principle and idea constituting spiritual harmony and allows us to talk about the universe of truth where matter is unknown and no error enters into that particular premise of that level? Dave, do you want to try? Okay, the category of the levels? Divine science. Mainly, you can pick it up. All right, Dave said it's divine science because it talks about principle and idea constitute spiritual harmony. That certainly is divine science, where principle and its idea is one. It's not talking about ideas, but idea in the singular, which is divine science, which is the universe. That the divine principle and idea constitute spiritual harmony. That's divine science. Heaven and eternity. And what is that spiritual harmony? It's the universe of truth. See, divine science just talks about the universe, not about individual man. That's another level. Divine science just wants to talk about the divine principle and idea constituting spiritual harmony. That's the universe of truth where matter is excluded. That it just doesn't enter into a standpoint of divine science, which is a standpoint of the all in all. All right? Now let's just go on. She even now talks about divine science. So she says, all right, that's good. You've interpreted it all right. That's what I'm talking about. Divine science, the word of God, saith to darkness upon the face of error. God is all in all. Now does she bring in another category? Divine science, the word of God. She's still obviously on the level of divine science. You hear it because she tells you, this is divine science, and I'm talking about the standpoint of God as the all in all. Does she bring in another category here besides just the levels? She says the word, huh? Divine science, from the standpoint of the word, saith to the darkness. Whenever we get any declaration, it's the word. So she's bringing in here the standpoint of divine science as the word. She's just saying, well, at the standpoint of divine science, at the point of the word, you're going to get divine science at the point of the word makes the statement that God is all in all. And then she goes on and says, and the light of ever-present love illumines the universe. Is that still divine science as the word, or is it divine science as something else? See, it would be divine science as the Christ, because that divine science is doing something. It's coming, it's illumining the universe. That's the operation, that's that self-operation of God. Divine science as the word just makes the statement that God is all in all. But divine science as the Christ says, and that all in all does something. It's going to illumines the universe. See, that's the Christ. It sets that word in operation. And then she says, hence the eternal wonder that infinite space is peopled with God's ideas, reflecting him in countless spiritual forms. What might that be a tone of? That lets us talk about that infinite space peopled with God's ideas. What category? Well, she just is going right on with the category of the word Christ, the fourfold operation, and showing, therefore, that's Christianity. That's the outcome. Hence, that's always an outcome. Hence, because divine science makes the statement that God is all in all, and it's making that statement to see, when we're faced with that standpoint that There's darkness upon the face of the deep. She says, I'm going to handle that claim of Genesis 1, 2, that the earth is without form and void, and there's darkness was upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. I'm going to show you through Revelation what the biblical writers meant by that in its science. And in its science, I want to show you that there never is any darkness, that you handled the belief of darkness right away. That's why she goes right out from divine science. She says, I'm not going to consider this darkness business. It's just an illusion. That the way you handle darkness is to know that there is, in reality, no darkness. So I'm going to go right out from divine science and show that the divine principle and idea constitutes spiritual harmony, heaven, and eternity. And in the universe of truth, matter, or you could say darkness or ignorance, whatever you want is unknown. No supposition of error enters there. No darkness ever enters into the universe of God, ever. She's still maintaining Genesis 1:1, that there's just God created the heaven and the earth, and it's within the divine system of reference. She says, therefore, we handle this claim of darkness from the standpoint of divine science, that God is all in all. But she says, she can see that's not enough. We need more. So she says, I'll show how divine science handles it. Divine science handles it by declaring through its self-operating system that divine science has an operation. It isn't just something there. That standpoint of divine science is operating in the universe, including man. And therefore, that standpoint of divine science is being declared to the universe. That standpoint of divine science is being declared and saying that God is all in all. Therefore, to the claim of darkness, we say, no, God is all in all. And that statement that God is all in all has a Christ. It has a self-operation. It's the light of ever-present love. It looms the universe. That statement that God is all in all is going to do something. It's going to illuminate the universe, the Christ. And the outcome of that is Christianity. Hence, that's an outcome. The eternal wonder that infinite space is peopled with God's ideas, reflecting Him in countless spiritual forms. She never gives in to error. She never says, now, you handle the belief of darkness by fighting with it. You handle the belief of darkness in your life by arguing it out on a lower court. She says, no, that the way we're going to handle darkness, I'm going to give you the method right now of handling the claim that anything else is going on besides God. And she says, that can only be done from what comes next, the first record of creation. See, the first record of creation is all positive. The only place we get darkness is in the second. So she's anticipating the second. That's Genesis 1:2 anticipates the second record of creation. And she says, the way you handle that claim of the second record of creation of darkness is now going to be with that first record of creation. And that first record of creation only goes out from reality. It only goes out from divine science, that God is all in all. And even though there's the second record of creation there with its claim of darkness, it doesn't exist. It's not a reality. And you handle it always from the first record of creation, from the standpoint of perfection, from the standpoint of divine science, from the standpoint that God is all in all. So you see these Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2 are very important to the standpoint of the first record and second record of creation that follow. They show us the method of handling error, as I say, and also give us the correct spiritual universe. Often I see where people just begin the first record of creation with Genesis 1:3, skipping Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2, which is sad. Because we can see that these two points give us the platform from which to study the first and second records. So already then, as we have seen, I'm just going to go back and recapitulate just for, before we go on. So already Genesis 1:1 is an absolute standpoint. It really gives us, as we've seen now, that whole, really the universe including individual man. It's complete in itself. Where in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth, and where Mrs. Eddy shows so nicely then how God has created the heaven and the earth according to its holistic dimensional operation. How that infinite principle on the science level, as we've seen now, on the level of divine science, creates the universe, and on the level of Christian science is that creative principle which creates individual man, and how on the level of absolute Christian science, that individual man or individual ideas unfolds step by step. That's what creation is all about. But if within our consciousness, as the biblical writers say, that to those born of a flesh, that standpoint of Genesis 1:1 has to be a discovery. So therefore, we handle then to those born of the flesh who are struggling with this claim of error. She says, don't make a reality of it. Handle this claim of error from the standpoint now we have seen of divine science. That it's really only a universe of principle and its idea. A universe where error or darkness is excluded. And don't be concerned because that's a self-operating system. That standpoint where error is excluded has within itself the ability to make itself known to the universe. It states itself as the all in all to the universe. And that statement has a Christ. It comes to the universe. And the outcome is that the universe is peopled with God's spiritual ideas. The outcome is that it's only a universe of ideas, never a universe of ignorance or matter or people. So with that help that we have then in Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2, in seeing how through spiritually scientific text interpretation we go in to look for the categories, we'll begin our work then with Genesis 1:3. And I want to build up this method of text interpretation slowly, just the way that John Dorley did in his discovery of the scientific method of text interpretation. First of all, what we will do is to use his method, where he would go into the text and read the text. And always, therefore, we see we have to realize in scientific text interpretation that we want to know what the author means about something, then not what we mean by it. So we begin with what the text has there. And then after we see what the text has to say, and we understand what the text has to say, then that can be translated into metaphysical ideas, and then that can be translated into the capitalized terms. So we go about this method of text interpretation slowly so that we're on secure ground and that it isn't just a guessing game. So let's start out and see then that we read Genesis 1:3 to Genesis 1:5 on the first day. And we're only going to look for the big main points of the first day. Let's not get sidetracked with the subtones, but stay with the main tone. So it says, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. You see how stereotyped this first record of creation is. It tells you when to stop, something we won't find in the second record. All right, so this is the first day, the first big subject. Now, adhering to our method of text interpretation, which is to just go out from the text and to see if we can understand what the text is saying. We see the big points there where it shows, and God said, let there be light, and there was light, and the light was good, and it was divided from the darkness, and the light was called day, and the darkness was called night. Now, listening, what is the subject in the biblical terminology, not in our terminology at the moment, but just using biblical terminology, what is the subject under consideration? Light. All right? Definitely. So we would say then, just to note for ourselves, that we could just jot down that the big main point being brought out here would be light for the first day. All right? I think that's quite clear. Then we go on to the second day and listen for the big point being brought out in the second day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. And the evening and the morning were the second day. We're forced to stop there. That's it. Another day. Now, in text interpretation, we ask for that which is new. What now is newly added in the creation of the second day? What is God creating now that he didn't create in the first day? What is... Okay, using the terminology of the Bible for scientific text interpretation, sticking to its language, it just says here that God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and the firmament divided the waters under and above, and the firmament is called heaven. What is, just in biblical language, the main subject? Firmament. I mean, it's talking about the firmament, isn't it? So we just jot down that's what's under consideration is the firmament. We make no metaphysical interpretation at this point. We just want to make sure we're getting down the main point that the biblical writers want to bring out in this second day. So we just take life easy and keep it simple. Then we go on to the third point. And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. So we ask, what has been newly interjected? What is the new aspect of creation appearing in the third day? All right. Earth. Certainly, it says that God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. Yes. And that dry land he called earth. Is there anything else that is new there besides just the creation of the earth? What other point is being brought out that might be new? What does the earth do? The earth brings forth grass, the herb, the fruit tree, and the seed within itself. So it just brings out a little bit about the earth. The main point is the dry land appearing, called earth. And that dry land has the seed within itself. But the main point, as you say, Ellen, is that the dry land appears. That's something unique to the third day. All right, so that's all we need to do at that point. And then we go on with Genesis 1:14 to 19. And God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years. And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good, and the evening and the morning were the fourth day. So what's new to the fourth day?
Morning and night.
All right, morning and night. What more would we say is new that we haven't seen in the first, second, or third day? The first day also talked about light. Is this the same light of the first day? Or is it a different light in the fourth day?
It's the same one.
But it's in the plural, huh? It says, and God said, let there be lights in the firmament. It has a little difference because it's talking about something different. It lights in the plural. And it says it's talking about putting lights in that firmament of the that has been created. It wants lights. And what are those lights? There's two great lights. One of those lights are going to rule the day, and the other light's going to rule the night. They're different light. They're lights in the plural. So one light is the greater to rule the day. What would that be, taken literally? What light rules the day?
Sun.
And what is the lesser light that rules the night?
Moon.
And then he made the stars also. So taking life easy, we say, all right, then we begin to see that this fourth day is bringing out mainly the big point that God said, let there be lights for signs and for seasons, for days and years ruling over the day and the night. So the big point, it would be the lights, and those lights which rule the signs, the seasons, the day and the year, the night and the day, that would be the sun, the moon, and the stars. So what has been newly created would be the lights in the plural, different from the first day. And those lights would be the sun, the greater light, the moon, the lesser light, and then the stars. Then we go on to the fifth day and see what is newly created. That would be from Genesis 1:20 to 23, where it says, and God said, let the waters bring forth abundantly the moving creature that hath life, and the fowl that may fly above the earth in the open firmament of heaven.